But we can go ahead and roll right now.
Yeah, let's start the show. I didn't realize I was muted again. 922. Here we go. Pop. Oh, give us a count around, Joel. The old timey count around.
2, 3, 1.
Who's the best show here?
That show!
Who's the best show here?
That show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Showtime! I use the bathroom.
Are you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the gas, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are linking bad. Well, the show link go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see challenges at linuxlink.net. Found tech show. Just sit right there, go together, just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 922 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going?
We have Joel.
Good evening.
And we have Joe.
Hey.
And I have a question. Mm-hmm. Do any of you use Google Pay?
All the time.
You do? Yeah, I have in the past.
I didn't think you did, Pat. So I have this problem. It's a problem of our own making. On occasion, my wife will give her debit card to one of our daughters who needs to go out and maybe to put gas in our car, my wife's car, or run to the store for her because she doesn't want to do it. And then we have the situation where the card doesn't get back to her. And then they go off to work or school or whatever, and my wife doesn't have a card, and now she's got to use my card. Because it's all linked to the same account, right? Uh-huh. And then if I'm not diligent about it, the card doesn't make it back in my wallet, and I go out to do something, and I don't have my card on me.
Oops.
So the kind of like the final nail in the coffin happened today when I went down to take my morning swim at the beach, and I grabbed my wallet and I looked and I'm like, oh crap, my debit card's not in. It's not like I needed it, but I'm like, that's right, because my wife gave the card to my daughter, her card, the other night, and she didn't get it back, and we ran to pick up to the store yesterday, and I had to give her my card to go pay for something. And then she just put it in her wallet or whatever. And so I guess I had to say, I got to remind her to get it back. And, you know, I came back today. And then my wife took my daughter. Come to find, I didn't know this, but one of my middle daughters was going with one of her friends out to, I think, Roanoke for this concert. And she's gonna be gone for the next.
And she has your wife's card.
Well, hold on. She's gonna be gone for the next 5 days. She's coming back Monday night, and she took her to Target. Now my daughter has her own card and her own, you know, account, and she's been working. You know, she has a job and she's been working. And she's all prepared to go. She comes home today. She's about ready to leave with a friend. Can't find her card. Somewhere between Target and home, she lost her card and looking all over the place. So my wife's like, I can't let her go off to wherever she's going without a payment method. So my wife's like, I have to give her my card. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do for the next 5 days? And so I'm like, all right.
The answer is use your card.
Yeah, use my card. And I'm like, well, what if I need to use it? So I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to go set up Google Pay And then I don't have to worry about whether I have my card on me 100% of the time. I don't like it, but I'm like, just in case. And I didn't find setting up Google Pay very intuitive.
Yeah, it's not that hard either.
It's not. And like, I'm like, I was like, all right, how do I add a payment method? And I downloaded the, updated it's one of those, app.
It's one of those things that'll vary depending on your bank a lot.
Yeah, but it wasn't – it like all I wanted to do was add my card, right? And I ended up adding my bank, which was fine, but I didn't really want to add my bank. And then I found out that I could add my card, and I don't know why. It's just – like the interface for this thing is bizarre. It's not something like even
Ding
now
used to
when
be
I bring
that
it up,
way.
Yeah,
used to be much better.
When I bring it up, like before, I didn't notice my card up in the corner next to my profile picture. But like the majority of the interface is like, hey, you can send money to people, and here's businesses that you can use it at. And then I'm like, well, no, I don't want that. I want to do something. And then there's like, I click the home, there's the pay button, and then there's like a explore button. I don't want that. Then there's the insights button, and I'm like, I don't want any of that. Like, how do I just make a payment? I figured it out, but it just.
You can add like your frequent shopper cards, like my Meijer grocery store here has that in the app, and I can use that in there too. But the interface could definitely be better. I'd love it if they take away some of that crap or split it off. Like for example, have a frequent shopper app take all that bullshit out of the pay app, you know, things like that.
Yeah. It looks like it's changed a lot. I just opened the app, and they're like, download this new app. And everything is completely different, and it does seem a lot more complicated. And it's like they want you to start a credit card.
Yep. I use it about once a week. Meijer grocery store takes it. However, Kroger does not. Walmart does not.
Well, I got lucky the other day. The last time I used Google Pay, as a matter of fact, because I don't use it very much anymore, but I forgot my wallet at home on a trip to Walmart, and this was before the app changed, so it's been a few months. But yeah, just set up with the Walmart and then the Google Pay, and it worked.
Interesting.
And that's it always worked at Walgreens.
Well, it didn't. Well, and same thing with CVS. It used to always work at CVS. When I go to a CVS, like, you know, if I was just out and about and stopped at CVS to grab a pop or something, you know, it would always used to work. But then they started they turned it off and started to push their own system, which failed. And then they turned it back on because, hey, people wanted to use Apple Pay. Because generally, I find if somebody has an Apple Pay sign, but they don't have the Google Pay sign, it generally does work with Google Pay. I like it. I think one of the reasons I like it is because I can see right away in the app. It gives me the option of emailing receipts and stuff like that. Like that actually happened to, not Google Pay, but when we bought our washer and dryer back in 2018, I think I bought it online and then had it delivered, and I went into my Gmail. I still have that email archived, so I can go back in there, find out exactly what model washer or dryer I have, because all the models are listed right there. And I also come to find out there's somebody doing it. I am assuming I'm signed up, but there is a class action lawsuit because my dryer, fortunately, we pay a warranty company and had the drum on it replaced twice, I think. Yeah, because the drum cracked. And this is a dryer we bought in 2018. And it shows you how crappy a lot of appliances have become over the years. Till then, the one that these replaced were probably 30 or 40 years old. I mean, they were very old. And we were handed down for us because our ones that we bought crapped out. So, generally though, I like having email receipts as well as all that stuff, and that's kind of one reason why I really like Google Pay, because I get that. So, no matter where I go, at least I can look on my phone and say, "Oh yeah, I just spent money over there," you know. And that way, if the wife asks me, you know, "What did you do here?" And if it's like someplace like Joe's gas station, you know, I have to go and look, you know, because sometimes they don't, you know, like it might be have a Chevron sign on it. That way, you know. So,
no, the only other times I actually used it.
Hello?
At the office.
Oh,
can you hear me?
You cut out for a second. No, I heard you say the only times I used it, and then that was it.
No, the only other times I can.
They got him again.
This is right at the same time, too.
Yeah.
That's really weird. No, the only times that I regularly used it was at the vending machines at work.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. My car dealer has the things on their machine too, and that's infinitely safer than swiping your card. And that's the other thing I like about using it too. It's actually much safer than swiping your card. Actually, here's something to try too. Next time your card's actually in your wallet, Dan, the places where you use Google Pay, just try, instead of swiping the card, try just tapping it. That generally works too.
The card or the phone?
The card.
Yeah, the card has an NFC chip in it. Almost all cards have NFC chips in them now.
That is a good point. My wife, since we have the same, you know, it's the same account, my wife's card is newer than mine, and hers specifically says that you can tap on it.
Yep.
Mine doesn't have that, as far as I know.
Well, once you add it into your Google Pay, it does. Well, your phone has it now.
Yeah. So I can see that the phone would have it, but I don't
contactless
know if the card actually
works.
The phone better, because then I have to, if you know, I don't have to dig out the card out of my wallet. Like look at it today when I went to the sleep doctor this afternoon for a med check. I had to go dig in my wallet because I had to find my Flex card. And then, of course, when I was there, I said, "Okay, once I'm done, can you print me out the records of my last two visits? Because my FSA account wants proof that I actually went there." You know, and I'm like, because, you know, it's all IRS rules. Never mind that, hey, it happened on the same day as the service. That should be your indicator that, yes, I had service that day at the doctor. But no, you have to actually send them something in. Like, I had to do the same thing for my glasses. I have a couple other things like that. I also have to do the same thing for my sleep doctor supplies. I changed supply companies this year. So I have to go in there and I have to do the same thing there, although it's not always like I think it's like if you first time you've done something there, they really ask for it, but then after that it's usually cool, but it just depends. You know, I spent $400 at the eye doctor. Well, yeah, I got new glasses. Actually, I didn't spend that much, but at least not yet anyway. But yeah, I like it. I like it. I will say the app does need work. But then I think all apps need work. like certain things lately. I'm kind of I haven't wrote anything yet, but I'm kind of going to be writing for another blog now, a tech blog.
Oh, you lost it. You What happened to?
No, I quit Gear Diary. They wanted me to write like one or two stories a week, and I'm like, yeah, I can't guarantee that. Yeah, and the other thing too is I can't. when I'm reviewing something, I can't really be, you know, I'm not going to be fake in my reviews, you know. So when I read the product description of something they want to send me and I'm like, yeah, no, I just don't get it. You know, I don't ask for the sample because I don't see the point in it, because I'm going to have a negative, not negative opinion, but just not be very excited to write the review, if you know what I mean.
Right.
It's like, why do I want to write a review on something I don't really want? You know, but... But now I'm going to be writing a review there, and he uses a he has his own domain, but he's using WordPress.com to host it. All right, so that means it's tied to my WordPress.com address. So I had to it's been a long time since I used my WordPress.com account, but I must have had 2-factor on. So, fortunately, they let you use your an SMS as your second factor if your authenticator is not in Google Authenticator, which is what I use for my authenticator. So I disabled the 2-factor, and then I just need to re-enable it, but I need to do it in a way where I can take a picture of the stupid QR code, so to get it added to the authenticator. But eventually I will. But that's one. And two, I'm also probably going to be doing another podcast. I think right now we're looking at Friday or Saturday nights. I don't know the name of it yet, but it's going to be with some of the guys I used to write with at Gear Diary. Chris Sparrow, who's been around forever. When I first ran into him is when I first was into Windows Mobile back in the day. You're talking 2003-ish time frame. So I've known him that long. Probably as long as you guys.
Back when Windows Mobile was good.
Yes, when Windows Mobile was good. Well, yeah, like right before Windows Phone, Phone System 7, Phobo, whatever they called that abomination that was the sequel to Pocket PC.
Well, yeah. 7.5 is when they really messed things up and completely switched around the UI and got rid of all the backwards compatibility with that just years and years of apps that worked great.
But yeah, so I've known him for a while, and Chris Gavula, I think is how you say it. So anyway, for tomorrow, Friday night, I have a chat. I don't think we're actually recording the podcast. I think we're kind of doing some plans for it and talking about what we're going to do. But I just wanted something where and that's the other thing too, is they could, on Gear Diary, I love them all, but they kind of started to get a little bit more political than I wanted to be, because I want to talk about tech. I don't want to talk about politics and tech necessarily. unless there's
I don't know, you talked a lot about politics on this show.
That was when Rich was still here. So that's what we're going to be talking about there. So
wait, where is it you're going to?
The name of the blog, I don't know if the podcast is going to be hosted on a blog, but the name of the blog is itechgear.com, I think.
High Tech Gear.
Hold on. iTech Gear. Actually, I have to press the buttons.
iTech, like in Apple's i stuff?
No, it's more like internet tech or something like that. I didn't pick the name.
Okay, itechgear.org?
Actually, that might be it. Let me check.
Bringing technology out of the cloud and down to earth?
I'm looking. Yeah, that's it, actually. Yes, that's it. And Chris, actually, that's been his. And you can tell he doesn't, like, the last one he had was from the 5th. So he doesn't, he's not real prolific yet, but he's you know, and he doesn't hate, unlike the other vlog, basically it's write what you want when you want. It's not, you know, we're not in it to, we're, as you can tell, we got a .org, so we're not really in it to make money. We're just in it to talk about and write about technology. So I mean, that's kind of it, and I haven't decided what I'm going to write about yet, but one of the things may be the joystick I'm making.
Okay.
So I've actually got the top of the joystick designed and printed, and I've got the joystick in arcade style. It's actually, I looked on the back of it, it's actually a Sanwa joystick. So it's all mounted on the back panel. I did get the joystick that I ordered from eBay that the eBay seller said, well, we're not sure if it's functional or not. All right. So I hook it up to the Atari 800 XL, which I actually did some minor repair work on, and it worked better than what I had, which I had the an Atari Pro Line joystick, which the Pro Line is the like long and skinny one they brought out with the 7800, which is one of my all-time favorite joysticks, but it stopped working whenever I would try to press the joystick to the left. So I'm gonna use that for the cable, and the one I got off eBay, which is probably the best looking Atari joystick I've seen in about 30 years. I mean, it looked brand new, and it really is an Atari joystick. It's not a remake. So it has the printing on its orange, just like the old Atari joysticks were. So I want to keep that one for the classic feel. But I got my TV, and the power supply and the cable came for the Atari 800 XL. I initially hooked it up to the TV, and it worked, but the keyboard didn't. Okay, so I still haven't put the screws in, back in it yet. I want to wait, you know, till I've had some time with it before I put the screws back in, because I don't want to put them back in and then have to tear it apart if the keyboard acts up again. So, unlike most older machines, the Atari 800 XL does not have mechanical, like, Model M style keys. It's actually a Mylar film, which has contacts on both sides of it and kind of folds in the middle, all right, and then the springs and everything else are all in the keyboard back. So there is a nice keyboard, but they actually did make one with mechanical keys, but this one didn't have that. Okay. So they had like about three different keyboard variants they use. So luckily, this is the Mylar one. So I thought, well, first let me try cleaning it. And it, you know, basically I unfolded it. I took an eyeglass wipe and I found some sections of the Mylar where there was some dirt buildup. So I very gently rubbed it with like an eyeglass wipe, threw it back together, put it in, and it worked just great. So go figure. So the keyboard is now functional again, and I can play Star Raiders on it, because Star Raiders used some of the keyboard keys for bringing things like the galactic map up and setting it to hyperspace, turning on the targeting computer, and things like that. So played a little Star Raiders with it, and it's working well. And it looks,
I still have that cartridge.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks odd playing it on a 4K widescreen TV, but you know, because it basically has black bars on either side, because the Atari 800 XL was built to work on a 4x3 CRT. So it's a square. So it's right in the middle of the screen. But it does look good, and actually it does look 100% better using the RGB cable. It goes RGB to composite. My TV happened to have composite. And the nice thing is that also lets you connect audio to the TV as well. So it does have an S-Video out on it as well, but I can't use it because my TV doesn't have S-Video. So it would probably be a little bit better if I got like a S-Video to an HDMI. Plus, there might be also a possibility if I got something like that that I could have that device scale it up so that it looks a little bit crisper, maybe. But I'm satisfied with the composite. It works great. So, I played around with a little bit of basic, nothing more than just, you know, 10 print hello, 20 go to 10, you know, and run that just for the heck of it, just to make sure the keyboard was kind of functional. And, but I played a little Dig Dug and a little, let's see, do I have missile? No, don't have missile command, but I do have Defender. I haven't played that yet. But I've got some other games on there too. But in the works, other than finishing off the joystick, I am going to look at purchasing probably both of these eventually. There is a cartridge called the Atari, I think it's called the Atari Max cartridge, which basically is a cartridge and has enough software on it to read files off of an SD card. You plug in the cartridge, and then the cartridge could have multiple cartridge images. So basically, you put the cartridge image on the SD card with the computer, and you can fit almost all the games on one card. And then when you turn on the computer, it brings up the interface first. You select the game and load it, and it instantly, just like it does off the cartridge. You can play the cartridge image. The other one I want to get is the SIO2SD, which basically is the same thing but for floppy images. So it plugs in the same port that you would plug the floppy drive into, and then you can do that. So one thing I'm not sure I want to try and do is Element 14 posted a video. I'm not sure when it was posted, but it was recent enough that it was, I think it was after their, this is Element 14 by AVNet, which is, I thought it used to be Newark Electronics that owned them, but I guess not anymore. Some guy took the Raspberry Pi compute module, wired it up, and wrote, and basically has it as a 3D accelerator for the Atari 800XL. Now, granted, he basically designed it such that you have like that Atari Max cartridge with the image on it, the 3D binary file, and it would read that and then render that to the screen. And it's via the HDMI port off of the compute module. So it's really interesting, and I kind of find it cool that they're trying to do some interesting things with the old 8-bit technology. And it's stuff that I grew up loving. I still love it today. And there's nothing like playing. I mean, emulators are fun, but there's nothing like playing an old video game on the original hardware. It just works so much better.
Did I get him?
No, I just stopped talking.
Oh, it sounded like an abrupt end. They're like, you got to cut off.
No, but yep, I'm really happy with it. The only thing I really need for the office... Oh, I got the rest of the office unpacked, so everything's kind of in place in here. Somewhat organized. I got some more things I'm probably looking at hanging up. Like, I got a picture of Jonathan Del Arco as Hugh Borg that he autographed back when Columbus had a place called Starbase Columbus, which was a Star Trek / sci-fi store. And unfortunately, they're gone. So, The original owner sold it to one of the trekker groups. They moved it to Eastland Mall, and then the guys who were running it decided they didn't, after COVID hit, they didn't want to deal with it anymore. Not to mention the fact, Eastland Mall is the kind of mall that used to be nice back in like the early 90s, but now there's hardly anything left. It's a true dead mall. There's not hardly anything there at all. No anchors.
Damn, I haven't been to a mall in over 3 or 4 years now. Jeez, it's been a while. When you say there's no anchors, you mean there's just is it like
no JCPenney, no Macy's? Yeah, those stores are there, but they're empty.
But nothing in there. Is it an actual indoor mall or is it one of the new like lifestyle?
It's an indoor mall. It's an indoor mall. Yeah, the mall was originally built and then remodeled. It was built in like the 60s.
Lifestyle malls or strip malls?
Yes.
Good question.
Well, see, I know where I used to live, and when I used to live up in the Center Valley, well, Lehigh Valley, in Center Valley, they put in this mall. It was called the Lifestyle Mall, but it was like, you're right, it's like a bunch of strip malls wrapped together. Yeah. But it's not like, it's not like just a parking lot and then a strip of stores.
It's got landscaping and paths to walk on.
It's called a lifestyle center, Joe.
Yeah.
It's like if you took a strip mall and you wrapped it around the cube strip mall.
It's a pretty strip mall.
Yeah, it's not one of those strip malls. Well, not yet, at least. It's not one of those strip malls where like every other shop is empty and it looks like
the name of the shop is
Hillbilly Joe's Mouth. It's what?
Right. The name of the shop is going out of business.
Yeah. So it's not the kind of place that has
It's Spirit Halloween.
You know, a couple of defunct, out of business stores and a bioplasm place where you can donate your plasma for money. And it's not like that.
A place to buy cookies right next door.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one of those lifestyle malls, but it actually has.
Put a fresh coat of paint on it, that don't make it not a strip mall.
Well, this one really isn't because it has like one center building that really is kind of like a tiny mall. It's not like super huge,
but all of the stores have basically sidewalk. Facing entrances.
No, not this building. some of them do. Like there's a California Pizza Kitchen there that has like a patio. You know,
I miss the Mall of America.
Yes, it's something like it's so it's the movie theaters in this building. It used to have a dream. I think it's called DreamWorks. It was that. It was a Planet Hollywood. And then it became a GameWorks. It was GameWorks. So, because when they opened this back in the late 90s, the movie theater was called Planet Movies, and then the restaurant was called Planet Hollywood. All right, so they had all these, like, I think we had the Rapier Fighter, not from the video game, but from the kind of mediocre movie that they brought out for Wing Commander that was hanging in the main area. They had, I think, in the restaurant they had the prop of Sylvester Stallone in the cryo prison, you know, where he was kind of naked, and they had I think it was Mary Conchita Alonso's costume from when she was in the game in The Running Man. So those kind of things. So all these Hollywood props. Well, that didn't last very long. You know, they ended up folding that restaurant, and then GameWorks moved in there, they had an Apple store that was in an outside shop, a Microsoft store, which I think is still there, I think. Although I think Microsoft might be shutting those down. But they have like a Smith & Wolensky, which is a really expensive steakhouse. I'm sure there's an American Girl in there.
Now I want to watch Mallrats.
Yeah. Not Mallrats. I'd rather watch Chopping Mall. Do you remember that movie?
That's a completely different movie.
Truth.
Like, no relationship whatsoever.
Right? But it was in a mall. But
that's about it.
Yeah, that's it. I would vaguely call that one horror. I don't really call it horror because there was not a lot of blood and guts in it, but dude is so 80s in that movie. It was... I'll say this. It wasn't a great movie, but it was a fun movie. But... where they had the party inside the waterbed stork. Or waterbeds. Did you ever have one? I did.
My dad did. My parents did. I never had one. After my parents' waterbed, I never wanted a waterbed. Terrible idea.
It was the first bed I bought with my own money. And it was the... at the time, it was the best thing ever, but as I got older, and when we bought our first house back in 1998, it had to go because Daddy's back hurt. Ugh. But, and then, of course, since then, I've got replaced the bed we got then with the Sleep Number bed, which I swear by. But even with the minor issues we had right after we moved. But yeah, that waterbeds, you know, we had a store here called Waterbeds and stuff where they had waterbeds.
I found a mall-based movie that you'll remember and that you'll love. Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
Again, not like Mallrats.
No. I got a better one.
But yes, I remember Dawn of the Dead. Wait, wasn't there a remake of that?
Yes.
Yeah, there was also Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I think that was one of the better mall movies.
A nurse, a policeman, a young married couple, a salesman, and other survivors of a worldwide plague that is producing aggressive flesh-eating zombies take refuge in a mega Midwestern shopping mall.
Well, then
that's
there
from
was,
the remake, the 2004.
What was the Rowdy Piper one? They Live.
It wasn't really a zombie movie, though. It was an 80s
and it
movie,
didn't take place
it?
In a mall.
No. No. But it did have a good 80s wrestling star. And a great line that was used in Duke Nukem.
Suck them down?
No, he had the line where he came there to kick ass and chew bubblegum and he was all out of bubblegum.
That didn't come from where you think it came from.
No. I have to see that. I know Duke Nukem had at least a similar line in it.
Oh, Duke Nukem.
Duke Nukem did say it. He said it's time to kick ass and chew bubble gum and I'm all out of gum.
Yeah, he said a lot of things.
John Nada, the line is, I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Right, but Duke Nukem was a paraphrase of Roddy Piper's famous line.
Correct.
Which was
correct.
Actually a paraphrase from, oh gosh.
Otherwise, nothing's new in this world.
No, it came from somewhere else, because he got it from somewhere, and he just ad-libbed it.
Yep.
So I did something the other day I hadn't done in a little while, and that was upgrade my arch machine.
Ooh.
And it went without a hitch, except when I restarted, because it was kernel update, so I usually restart after a kernel update, and I went and I typed in the old glorious start X, and Window Maker wasn't running anymore. It was throwing a weird error. It was throwing an error about lib magic wand and the version that it was compiled with not being there. So, you know, I had just assumed that Window Maker was in the Arch repositories, and I don't think it is. It's in the AUR, and that's where I believe I got it. So I went to the AUR, and because I'm a lazy son of a bitch, right, I decided that I'm not going to follow the manual process of downloading the package build when I could just use one of the wrappers to Pac-Man. I think the preferred ones, I don't know. I can't figure out which is the preferred one anymore. It used to be YAURT. Some people say that's not the one to use. Then UART. Yay. Yeah. So I've been using, I always used YAURT. And so there's another wrapper that's written in Go called Yay. So I went to use Yay, but Yay isn't working anymore because I got to update that. So I pulled the package build down for Yay, and I ran that, and it kept complaining about FStack clash protection being used in favor of FStack check, to which I was like, what the fuck is that, right? For some reason, like, it didn't like that change. And it was a simple fix, although I'm not 100% sure why it was a problem, because I went into Etsy make package. Oh, yeah, the make package comp file. And in there is the compiler flags. So it's the make package comp file. And so the one of it is FStack clash protection check. And so what I did is I replaced it and put back the just FStack check. And so class protection is supposed to give you better, but I was like, you know, fuck it. I just want to get this installed so I can get back to what I was doing with Window Maker or whatever and see if that works. And it did. So I got Yay installed, and then I was able to get Window Maker installed, and then I was happy again. So then I went back and I restored the original makepackage.com and recompiled Yay, which I don't know what happened between now and then, but now Yay,
walk up. Sorry, dude.
Yay would compiled fine with the FStack clash protection in there. And then, you know, so I reinstalled it like that and everything was fine. But that was an odd error that I had never encountered before. I looked it up. Usually, like, Arch is fantastic with documentation and problems and fixing problems. Mm-hmm. So I usually have, I didn't find anything about this on there. I kept
nine times out of 10, you search for something Linux and it goes to an Arch document usually.
Yeah. They have a lot of, now if you're not going to find it in Arch, where are you going to find it? Gentoo. Mm-hmm. I found write-ups about it in Gentoo. And there's a couple of articles on the developer's Red Hat, a blog and they're about stat clash protection and stat clash mitigation in GCC and those and the one that I was looking at is the stat clash mitigation in GCC part 3 and why F-stat clash protection is the better option in F-stat check and all that for preventing clash mitigation, which could cause a memory buffer
overflow
so it can cause could cause bad things to happen.
Yeah,
memory leaks and exploitation like that. So I'm not saying it's not a bad thing to have. Obviously, anything that makes your system more secure is great. It's just a weird conflagration of things, and it wasn't in Arch proper that there was a problem. But I don't know. Maybe it would have been mitigated a little better had I, upgraded a little more regularly. But again, everything's yep. back to what it was, and everything is happy. They're all my systems. You know, I've been keep doing better. And there's no Yay. Reason not to be upgrade, because it's always available there. You know, you just run the upgrade. It takes just a few minutes, and you're good to go. Yeah, and interesting. Yeah, and so the weird thing is, what prompted me to do the upgrades was more or less, I don't know what happens on this Fedora build here. But after running for a little bit, for some reason it loses the functionality for the mic, the headphone jack in anything that's not. Well, I'm not going to say I don't know about KD, but like if I'm not running GNOME, like I'm running Ice Window Manager or Window Maker or something else, it tends to lose the functionality. After a week or two, it seems, of the headphone jack. I have no idea why. And I can reboot the machine, and it doesn't fix it. But if I go into GNOME, and then I don't even have to do anything. I just got to go into GNOME and then log back out and go back in as Ice Window Manager. And I'm fine with the headphone jack after that. And the weird thing was, like, the scroll bar stopped working with the mouse, with the trackpad, being able to use, like, put two fingers on there and you got the scroll bar up and down. And so I'm like, well, I mean, I guess I could see if booting into GNOME fixes it, but I got to do my updates anyway. So let's see what happens in reboot.
Yep.
I didn't click the right button for some reason. It went into GNOME after I logged back in. So I logged back out and I'm back in Ice Window Manager. And sure enough, the headphone jack's working again and the scroll bar's working. Everything's happy. Weird quirks like that. I've never had that happen in other distributions. But weirdly enough, it's been happening in Fedora. Ubuntu, yep. I haven't had a problem. Arch, I'm not having a problem. I'm not having a problem on Tumbleweed, but the only problem I have with Tumbleweed is that machine is like a SSD based, really cheap net. I don't even know if it's a it's not a Chromebook, but it's like it might as well be a Chromebook. I don't know. It was really cheap. It runs really good, but if I don't, it gets wonky after a while, and I do really need to update that when I got to run my zipper. So it was a bad idea to choose Tumbleweed to put on there. I don't know why Tumbleweed, I chose Tumbleweed.
Tumbleweed's what, the rolling release of Fedora?
No, Tumbleweed's the rolling... Wait, is it Tumbleweed? You know what? I think you're right. It's not... no, Tumbleweed is OpenSUSE.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wait, isn't Rawhide the rolling release of
Fedora or Red Hat? One of the two. Yeah. I think you know what I think Dan needs now.
What I think
he needs storage is what you need.
Yeah. What is Rawhide? I think is the isn't Rawhide like considered the latest version, the alpha version of Red Hat? Isn't that what they call?
What? Doing research while we do the show.
Yeah, Red Hat Linux Rawhide is typically the latest release. So yeah, and Tumbleweed is SUSE's.
Yeah, it's Fedora now, but yeah, Rawhide is Fedora.
Okay.
But, yeah. Yep.
I still always have a soft spot in my heart for SUSE. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, at least you didn't say Caldera.
You know what? Back in the day, Caldera was an interesting distribution.
Yes, it was.
It was. It was
one of the few that actually had boxes sitting on computer store shelves at the time.
And it came with a NetWare client. I remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember, that's primarily why I bought a box copy of Caldera, because it came with the NetWare client. I wanted to play around with it at work, I think I did get it to work, but then I was like, it's a pain in the ass. What am I going to do with it?
And now NetWare is gone.
But, yeah, and then NetWare went all in on Linux, and then the only thing that came out of Novell after that was
GroupWise.
Yeah, Linux. I guess GroupWise is still out there, isn't it? Didn't we look that up a few years?
There's some that still use it, I think, yeah. I mean, it's nowhere near what it used to be, but hey, you remember Chuck Payne, right?
No, who's Chuck Payne?
Chuck Pup, I think that's what he went by on IRC, Chuck Pup, I think. Anyway, he runs a Facebook group for small bore computers. And I don't know if anybody on the show has heard of the Argon 1 case or the Argon 1 M2 case. And what these are Raspberry Pi, primarily the four cases. The M2 actually adds the M2 and M2 SSD to the Raspberry Pi 4. Well, they got something that's starting tomorrow on Kickstarter called the Argon Eon, E-O-N. I did put the link in the Mumble chat there. And essentially, it is a 4 SATA Bay NAS based on the Raspberry Pi 4 of your choosing. So you get the 4 gig or the 8 gig or the 2 gig and you slip it in the case there. And we don't know a lot of details on it yet. I'm assuming tomorrow when the Kickstarter starts, they'll have the standard old video. But I'm assuming you could probably run, like I could run OpenMedia Vault on this thing if I wanted to. But then you just buy your SATA drives and plug them in. I don't know if it's toolless. There's not a lot of details on it, but it sounds and looks really cool. So, and I'm not usually a fan of Kickstarter projects, but I'd be willing to do this because, and the company name is Argon 40, by the way, if you haven't ever heard of Argon at all. But Argon 40, that's, you can go to their website and you can see the Raspberry Pi 4 cases. Probably the most interesting one's the M2 one, which adds the ability to add a M2 SATA drive to it. So, but I'm kind of interested in this because I kind of have a Raspberry Pi based NAS. It's running on a Raspberry Pi 3, but I kind of wouldn't mind upgrading it. So that looks pretty dang cool. It's kind of where, I mean, you need some storage, Dan.
Yeah.
But
Novell
to archive all those shows. Novell's still around.
I still have all the shows, though. Yes, Novell is still around. It's part of Micro Focus now, and they have...
That's true. Micro Focus, the COBOL company.
They have a what they have left is Open Workgroup Suite, GroupWise, and Vibe for collaboration. Everybody loves GroupWise, right? For security, there's ZenWorks Suite. ZenWorks was a pretty interesting SEMworks was pretty cool when it first came out.
Right.
I used to be able to do some really interesting packaging stuff with that. I liked it. And file networking services, file management, Filer, iPrint, and Open Enterprise. Open Enterprise server still there. Wow. I can't believe that's still around.
Good old IPX networks.
Yeah, advanced file print network and storage management services.
Boy, Micro Focus is all about keeping around crusty crap.
I guess so. So it almost looks like all of NetWare is still there in some regards. It's just not called NetWare anywhere more.
I remember trying to get GroupWise working on Linux. Oh boy,
the client or the server?
Just the client.
Because I remember having to manage GroupWise servers. Weren't they a treat?
Any email server is a treat to try and manage. It's like if anyone ever asked about wanting to set up my own mail server at home, that's the thing I least would want to do.
It's a bit of a pain in the ass. Anything you did NetWare-wise was a bit of a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yep.
The good old days. Remember the good old days, Joel? Remember the
good old days
where with Caldera Linux and SUSE Linux, and you get that disk and you pop it in there, and you'd be like, this is when it's going to work with my graphics card. And then you get it to work with your graphics card. Oh, yeah, never. And then eventually you get it to work with your graphics card, and then now I've got to get it to work with my Win modem. And there you get it. Then you're like, screw this. I'm going out to buy US Robotics.
Yep. Give me a plain old modem that I can hook to a serial port.
Yeah. Give me that. I miss some days I look back and I miss those days of the big beige boxes.
Yep.
The Market Pro shows. Pentium.
And do you really have a desire to build your own computer now? Probably not. I know I don't. Too much. I've thought about it from time to time, but
you know, I don't know. Quite honestly, looking at those refurb systems with Pat a couple of weeks ago, I'm like, they're already like 4 or 5 times more modern than what I'm running now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's like, well, I can't. You know, if I really wanted to get something great, I could probably build it. I don't even know if I could build it cheaper than what you could buy out there anymore.
I don't think you can. You're going to spend more money.
Considering that, depending on the graphics card you want, you could be paying between $200 and $300 just on the graphics card.
Well, isn't that considered a low-end graphics card now? Is it like $600-$700?
It depends. I mean, you got... if you ever watch Jay's 2 cents, he builds them and he does it as business, but he also will do builds on YouTube just for the heck of it. And most of his systems have water cooling in it, and he gets into the overclocking of it. And me, being a electronics engineering technology degree guy, that's what my degree's in. I don't like driving chips over spec, so I'm not a fan of overclocking for the most part, you know. But some of the systems this guy will build will have like a 1500 watt power supply. That's a lot of power, man.
So here's my question about that. What is that system used for, unless it's gaming. High-end video production?
Mm-hmm, that's or the other, yeah.
I mean, is it still important? I mean, is it important to have a high-end graphics card for video production?
Yes, and the only reason I say that, and it's going to depend on which program you use and which OS platform you use. But, like, for example, if you use Creative Cloud, like I do, Creative Cloud has stuff built into the rendering that'll let you render the video on the CUDA cores that are on the NVIDIA graphics card. So the more CUDA cores you have, the faster your video will render. So, and it's mostly just for that rendering phase. The, like, I edit mostly 1080p on my Surface Pro, which has Intel graphics. The computer I'm using today actually has a Optimus chipset, so it has both the Intel as well as the NVIDIA chip, like I think in like a 920 or something. It's not a barn burner by any means, but there was some significant differences when I first got it. Now it doesn't really matter as much because my Surface Pro overall is faster than this, especially when I'm running Windows 10. It's like the future computer I'm looking at for that stuff, which I do think that I'll probably get into more of the video editing with projects at the church, mostly because the pastor is going to another church here after a couple weeks. So the new pastor that we had, he did a lot of his video production that he used during the sermons he did on his own. So I didn't have to do hard. I haven't done a church project for video in, unless you count recording slow-mos.
Your next pastor will be like, technology is the devil.
I don't think so. We have an interim pastor who's the current pastor for evangelism, though. He's going to be our interim, but we'll find out who we get. But, you know, but needless to say, I do see myself doing yet more. So I think as soon as... I have an old friend that I got a job at.
If you work in technology, you're going to hell.
Never. David wouldn't be like that. But I referred someone and he joined our team. So he's been there for 2 or 3 weeks. So as soon as he gets in 90s, I should get a referral bonus, like $1,500. So I'm planning on spending that on a new system and ditching some of my older stuff. some of the older stuff I may ditch already before that happens, just because I got so much things around here. Like, one of the things I'll probably ditch is my, unless somebody in the last 6 months has figured out how to put something else on the Aspen Hybrix, I'm getting rid of it. Because I don't use it, because I can't run anything modern on it. So that will go. The ones that will stay are like my retro machines. Like, I have the PowerMac, the same PowerBook that you had, the G4 12-inch, which for me, that's one of my all-time favorite form factors for Macs. That was a nice one. But can't run anything higher than, Leopard. I think whatever it was, like the one after, I think it was the one after one after Tiger. So then that was the last release it could run. So I can't run. You can't run a nice browser on it. Chrome won't run on it. Firefox won't run on it. I think IceFox will, just because you can compile it. But it's not why I have it. I know I can't get a modern Linux running on it anymore. Power support, at least from the PowerPC chips that Apple used in the PowerBooks, just won't run anything modern. And the only one that would be the G5s. So those you can still get something relatively modern. The last release of Ubuntu that would work on this is 16.04. So I'll just leave the Mac OS X on it and dick around with that every once in a while. It's just there more for display than anything. Just like just like my Nokia N810s, which I have. What Nokia could have been from Nokia. But, and speaking about that time period too, I ran into, there is a guy by the name of, his name's Michael Fisher on YouTube. He's goes by Mr. Mobile, and he has a series of videos of, he calls, When Phones Were Fun. So, like, he has one where he talked about, remember all the weird formats of phones that Nokia had in the, late 90s, early 2000s, somewhere around there? Then, so he had one on that. He had one on the Palm Centro. He had one on some of the messaging phones. One on the Sidekick, stuff like that. And those are really great videos, besides just bringing back a time where phones were actually exciting and fun, and not all square slabs. One of the ones that I liked that he did was, I think he did one on the entire LG line. Yeah, because LG, like, within the last year has basically withdrawn the mobile phone market. And that's one, they had one that I didn't hear about, the LG Wing, which, if you remember in Iron Man, the phone that Tony Stark used in the battlefield, had the little screen that flipped out on top, that actually was one that was made by LG back in the day. Well, the Wing is similar, but it's an Android power phone, and the screen would pivot up, so basically you'd have like a T-shaped screen, essentially. So, it's a really interesting device, but unfortunately, LG's not making phones anymore, so after last year. But LG had a lot of good phones. Like, some of the ones I had was the LG Envy. That's one of those messaging phones that flip out and you do texting on. You know, I had several of those, and just watching those videos brought back a time in my life which phones were fun back then. They're kind of boring nowadays. Not a bad thing.
It's
but,
not
you
that
know.
They're boring. It's just that they're, you know, all the same.
Right. Like the well, and then the most exciting ones are ones you probably don't want, like the Galaxy Fold or the Galaxy Flip, because the screen can indent like hell. But
just waiting for the technology to come along a little bit.
Yeah, the 3 looks nice. It's one of those things. I wouldn't recommend buying those foldy ones unless you go out in a touch it and feel it. And use it a little bit in the store and see if you like the feel of it. It might work for you, but I'm more interested in, like, whenever the next Galaxy Note comes out, which I think they are bringing one out, but not this year. So, and I used to not be a fan of Samsung, but now they really, the One UI is really nice. I don't mind it. And then you talk about, well, rooting your phone. It's like, do we really need, I mean, yeah, if you don't root your phone, then you don't have entire control of it. But I don't really, it's not like it was when the G1 came out and when Pat and I had to pretty much ROM it before it became real usable.
Yeah, it used to be you rooted your phone to add back in all the functionality that got taken away. Now, right, there's not a whole lot of point unless you're really interested in getting rid of metrics.
Right. Like installing a non-Google version of Android.
Exactly, getting rid of metrics.
And I myself don't mind it too much.
Yeah, but I don't mind it either. I already know that, you know, Google bought my soul a long time ago.
Yep. Oh, and I've got the iRobot Brava, which is the mop robot, and it recently just added a feature to it. I'm glad it actually only happens at night, but basically if you have it running and if it finishes a job on all of your speakers in your home, it'll say the mop bot. Well, that's because that's what I call it. The mop bot has finished a job. All right. If the thing gets stuck, which it's actually pretty decent at not getting stuck, but every once in a while it will get stuck. Say you move something around or something and it didn't anticipate like that table being moved a little bit. So if it gets stuck, or say you were halfway through a job and its battery started running low, and usually it will return back to it. But if it's too far away, it will crap out in the middle of the floor. All right. That doesn't happen often, but it does happen. So in that step, you just have to walk it all the way back to the dock station. Same thing goes when it runs out of fluid. It will take itself back to the station so that you can refill it. The one thing I haven't figured out, though, is if you just use it for a short job and you still have plenty of fluid left where it can start the next job, it'll tell you to fill it up before it starts that job. So I have not done anything. Like, you can schedule it so it just does its thing overnight. But I have so much flooring downstairs, I really can't do that. because I can't set a job where it gets all the floors in the main living area during the day, because one, I have to close the laundry room door for one when I do that. And unfortunately, I really can't do that because that's where the cat box is.
Uh-huh.
So, if I don't include that one, I can have it do everything else, but it won't have enough battery or cleaning fluid to do all the floor I have downstairs in one shot. So you basically have to kind of schedule it, space out the schedule over the night so that it does some of it. Like, say if I do the kitchen and the breakfast room, probably takes about a half hour to do it. So if I schedule that at like 11 o'clock and it'll do that, let it charge a bit, and then schedule the next one at 1. I don't know if it actually would have enough fluid to do the living room, but I could have it do that. If I had to say what would I like iRobot to improve on it, is I would like it to increase the capacity of the fluid. Let me put like a full liter in it or something like that. That would definitely get me through it, and put a bigger battery in it too. But other than that, I do like it. I'm debating on getting one of the sweepers that will work along with it, because what you can do is you can set up the schedule so that it runs the vacuum unit by itself, and then run the mop bot after that. So the vacuum can do the sweeping you would normally do with a broom. And then your other bot would come in and do the flooring so that there's no crumbs on the floor, you know. But generally, the only place I usually have to worry about that's in the kitchen. And the kitchen's small enough, I just take a broom and run it through there and then start the mop bot and have it do the kitchen. But I also like that you can have it like certain areas, like the dining room where I have the table. It can get lost underneath that table. So I just have it not mop under the table. That way I just Swiffer it underneath it and I'm done for the dining room. But it's getting better. It's one of those things that gets better over time because it's learning your house. So it learns where the furniture is at, stuff like that. So eventually it will avoid it. But funniest thing I ever saw, though, with it was when I started it up either last Thursday or one time this week. The cat was out in the living room when it started and started to head towards the dining room. And the cat was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He kept backing up. He was like freaked out by it. Then eventually he went back to the bedroom and said, I don't like this. Yeah, so he's not a fan of it. I have a, my boss actually has both of them, both the vacuum and the mop bot, and I think she's actually had her cat sit on top of the vacuum and ride it. But Sparta would be too chicken to do that. But
the good old days. What yes. is that model of robot? The sweeping by
the BRAAVA M6.
It doesn't map out your room, does it?
It does, actually.
Oh, it does, because
this one does.
It's like a lot of the if it's not a really expensive high end model, sometimes they just have a little sensor on there.
Yeah,
it'll just, if it bumps something, it'll back up and then turn a little bit.
The old cars that used to do that. Remember those toys?
Yeah.
Yeah. But this has quite a bit more intelligence than that. Thankfully, they do have one that's like that. That one, actually, their low-end one, I think technically you actually have to take it off the charger. I don't think it actually has, like, Wi-Fi in it, like some of the, with most of their models. So, I think. But those are nice. Actually, it might be worth buying one of those to like, drop it in my bedroom and have it do the bedroom. Because right now, I don't have that on the map. Because what I did find out, too, is if you have, like, a room that's normally closed when you run it, it, of course, doesn't map that room. But then if you leave the door open, like one time, I don't have it doing the little hallway between the two bedrooms. I don't know exactly why that is, because that's hallways always open. But I decided, well, I wanted to have it do like my son's room or something like, or that room there. So I basically just picked it up and carried it over there and then pressed the clean button. And it did start doing cleaning, but it kind of got lost and it couldn't find the charge station. In fact, it started like a new map, and I'm like, I don't want to do that necessarily, but I assume that's like for people who have flooring that they need to do on multiple floors of their home, where I don't, like the upstairs is all carpet. So, you know, I just sweep that. In fact, I bought a new sweeper after we move in here, and it just stays in my office because it's the only place I have carpet. So I'll do that once a week. I do need to get, like, a little handheld one to do the steps, though, because trying to take an upright vacuum down the stairs to vacuum it is a pain in the ass. Little handheld sharks or something, and that works a whole lot better.
Damn, remember back in the day when all you had was an upheld vacuum?
The tank vacuum, yeah.
Before the Dustbuster came out, and you had to carry that shit all over the house if you wanted to.
And
there
was no such thing as cordless anything, that stuff goes. But yeah.
Now they got the retractable cord shit going on.
Yep, mine has that.
And you got to be careful because if you let that thing wrap back in there too fast, it's going to hit you in the ankles and that's going to hurt. You'd be hopping around the living room.
Mine actually, you can, like, it kind of, like, pivots a little bit too. Like, it's really easy to maneuver around the carpet, but it's definitely too heavy to go carting down the stairs trying to sweep it. And I don't really need it anymore, but it came with like a pet hair remover thing for furniture. And my cat will very rarely sit on a couch. I walked downstairs and he was sitting on the couch this afternoon. And I'm like, oh, you see, you found the couch finally. And he just yacked at me and then went back to the bedroom. He's like, leave me alone.
So, Joe, You still there?
Yes.
All right. So this is going to tie all this together, right? This is going to tie all this together. My wife and I were talking a couple weeks ago, and I'm just thinking about this now because we're talking about vacuum cleaners. And there's a mall where we used to live called the Westgate Mall, and it was the epitome of like dead malls. And it was owned by these two crazy sisters that refused to, like, for 20 years, refused to do any updates or let anybody else into there.
Oh, it looked like it was from the 70s.
It was like, it was just, and so there was never anything good in there. And you know how you talk about the anchor stores? There was only ever one anchor store, and that left a long time ago, but it was still there. So there was this, there was a couple of shops in there that had remained in that mall for as long as we could remember. One, there was always a grocery store in there, and it was an IGA, and then I think it became a Weiss. But there was another store in there, and it was a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, wow.
Appliance repair shop. And it was like right in the front. Right. And so we're like, I can't imagine that place would still be in business. Right? And so we looked it up.
It
is. Apparently, they not only are they in business, but they moved out of the mall into a bigger location. And I was thinking to myself,
that's kind of surprising. Nobody fixes things anymore.
Yeah, so they do two things. It's called ABC or AVC. It's vacuum cleaners and sewing machines, I think, are their big things. Now, we kind
of always the weird combination. Everyone has one of those kind of stores somewhere in their city. I guarantee that.
People who are into sewing machines and into sewing take their sewing machines seriously, get high-end sewing machines. They fix them, right? Because we had... What?
Why did you say goodnight?
Oh, goodnight. Because we had talked about that. It just felt weird that vacuum cleaners would still be something that a lot of people go to get fixed. Now, when our vacuum cleaner like has a problem, like the belt goes or something, I'll fix that. That's not hard
that's
to
easy,
do.
Yeah.
So that, I was going to ask you, Joe, since you are Mr. Fix It, do you do vacuum cleaners?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do, but that's because I have, you know,
because
two
you
large
have to.
Dogs and
yes,
two cats.
You have to take it apart. You have to take it apart to suck the dog out of it.
Well, you gotta get in there with like a wire hanger or something.
Yeah,
clear clogs.
I mean, aside from that, I mean, have you had to actually, besides like the basic, have you like to actually had to fix the vacuum cleaner, like replace the motor or anything, or would you even do that?
Well, at that point, I think it would be a matter of finding parts.
If I had two of them, and there were
two different faults, then yeah, I would take parts from one and put it on the other. But that's never really happened. So, yeah.
Because I was like, I was hard pressed to think, like, I guess if you bought like a really expensive vacuum cleaner, of course you'd get it fixed. But do people buy expensive vacuum cleaners
anymore?
Well,
if you buy a vacuum cleaner, it's expensive.
Is it? I don't know. I haven't bought a vacuum cleaner in like forever. I don't think I ever. I think the last vacuum cleaner I bought was like over a decade ago, and it was at a Walmart, and I don't even remember how much it was.
Even your cheap vacuum cleaners aren't exactly cheap, so.
So what does a vacuum cleaner go for these days?
Well, $100.
Well, I mean, yeah, granted. I mean, it's kind of like a shitty way to look at it, but if you had a $100 vacuum cleaner for like 5 or 6 years and it broke, how much is that part going to be to repair that? And would you just go buy a new one?
Probably the point where you buy a new one, I would think.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, if you're going to pay somebody to repair it, you're going to be paying somebody at least $100. You have to figure an hourly on that is gonna be at least $75, and then parts and then tax. So then what's the difference if you buy a new one or not?
Not much.
Well, but that's what I mean.
If I decide it's broke, if I decide that my vacuum cleaner is broke that means that it's really, truly broke.
Right.
And not worth fixing, because you can go buy a new one for what it would cost to fix it.
Exactly. That's broke beyond repair.
And it's kind of the way I feel like with the dryer. If I can't fix it myself, you might as well just buy a new one, because it's going to cost you that much money to have someone come out and fix it.
Well, I have a warranty company, so that's not necessarily true.
Well, of course, if it's under warranty, though, that's a different story.
Well, everything in my house is technically under warranty because I pay a warranty company.
Oh, you do?
Yep, I do too. Yeah.
So how much is that warranty company, like, how much do you pay for your washing and dryer to be on warranty?
I've thought about getting rid of them because they're a little bit screwy. So it's about $70 a month.
Yeah, it's about the same one I pay, yeah.
And I've had a microwave go out, and I've had my dryer go out, and I've had my kitchen sink go out.
Yep.
Now, the microwave was fine-ish. But it's $75 to get them to come out, and then you can't get that back. Then they decide that it's broken, and then they're either going to send somebody by to fix it, or that they're going to pay you the amount that it would cost them to replace it.
Right.
So they gave me the money for the microwave, and I went out and got a much cheaper microwave than they said. So I made a little bit of money on that. But the dryer... You know, $75 to get somebody to come out, and then I ended up having to pay them the difference of what the company was going to pay them, so I lost money on that. Now, with my sink, I needed a replacement faucet. So I talked earlier on to the plumber, and he's like, they pay me, but I'm not going to come out to the house for less than $150.
Right.
So I paid him the initial I paid the company the initial $75, and they paid this guy at least $150 to come out.
Yep.
But then they said that they could get the entire sink replaced for like $125, and they wouldn't move on that. And it's like, you can't get the plumber out here for less than $150. I know he told you that. He told me he told you that. So where's the value of the sink, which would be at least another $100-something?
Yeah.
How the hell did that work out?
It all depends on what kind of sink you want, too.
They're just going to give you the sink for $125 and tell you to put it in?
No, they were going to give me $125 and have me use that to buy the sink and pay the repairman. And it's like, that's right. What they ended up doing, because they wouldn't budge on it. But I know that they could not get it done. That there was no way that they could get it done for $125. It's literally not going to happen in this area, because plumbers cost more than that for a single hour.
But then how the hell does that benefit you? I mean...
Well, in most cases, it would. If it was a higher dollar value item, then yeah, it would have been better.
Right.
But that was one circumstance where it wasn't. It worked out with the microwave. It didn't work out with the sink.
Right. Yeah, that's like in my case... In fact, I think my company doesn't even have a copay anymore, but I have a Samsung dryer, and I mentioned it during a pre-show that we lost the drum in it twice, and we've only had it 3 years, and the drum repair itself would have paid for a cheap new dryer, but they fixed it twice, so I came out looking like a rose out of that one.
Honestly, half the time, if I see a good, like, 20-year-old dryer, and I'm in the market for a dryer, I'd prefer to buy one that was 20, 25 years old than I would a newer one.
Yep. Well, and here's one thing I've noticed with a lot of the newer ones, because it's generally quieter and cheaper, they'll put plastic in for the drum, which is just an idiotically stupid idea.
Yeah.
Because it makes it too light, and it'll make it easy to crack, too. But
yeah, and you got plastic that's getting hot and getting cold and getting hot and getting cold. And
yep. They should have metal in them.
A year ago, I had a washer and a dryer. Now I have 3 dryers and 2 washers.
And you need to get rid of them.
Well, that's the thing, you know. It's like, my neighbor moved out and they were going to toss out the dryer. And I'm like, that's a perfectly good dryer. If my dryer goes, I could just roll that one in here. I don't have to spend like $300-$400 on a dryer for a low end dryer. And then my daughter, Paige, moved from her where she was now into this new place, and they didn't have a washer dryer hookup. So now their washer and dryer, which I paid for, is in my garage. So I have two dryers in the garage and a washing machine in the garage, and then I have a washer and dryer down here. So if something goes wrong, knock on wood, hopefully it won't, I just roll one out of there and roll the other one in.
Now, I do have to say, my Samsung washer has been dead reliable. It's never had one. I should knock on wood. But it's been really reliable. So would I buy Samsung washer dryers again? Probably not, just from my experience. I would look at LG, though. But it's
I'll eventually be in the market for a new washer. I already got the dryer replaced with, something brand new out of the store because that's what the wife wanted. So, eventually the washer will get replaced too. They won't match, but that's, not something I care about.
You see, now, if I had to replace one of them, I'd have to get both of them because my wife wants everything matchy-matchy. it's just like the experience of unpacking this house has been nuts. I'm like, I'm going to go put this in our walk-in because we have a big, huge walk-in closet in our bedroom. Or actually, I should say in our owner's suite because we have the big bedroom, a bathroom, and the closet is connected right down to the bathroom. And then there's also a linen closet in the bathroom too. So in our area, like in just my wife and I's area of the house, we have a ton of storage. So I'm like, I was going to go put this in the walk-in. Why do you want to do that? I'm like, because there's room in it. and I'm like, it's like, and then something, I did something in there and she didn't like it being in there. And she's like, I'm like, it's a closet. Who gives a shit what it looks like? And she's like, well, I do. I'm like, we're the only ones in it. Why do you care? As long as it's functional, But no, she cares. I do like having that walk-in closet there. Like I have bags that I did store in my office at the old house that I just stuck in there. We got plenty of room in there. So I got suitcases in there and bags and stuff like that, as well as my dresser's in there too.
I got a completely redo my garage again. It feels like I just did it a couple of weeks ago. And then I also need to redo the storage in the attic above the garage and
compress. At least that you have attic storage that you can use.
Yeah.
I mean, our attic up there. Yeah. The code for this house, for the city, we had the builder had to put light bulbs in the attic. But then the builder also recommends that you don't store anything up there either.
Well, there's what the builder recommends, and then there's reality.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do it though, because the doors there are just they're just pieces of drywall on a piece of plywood. So well, I mean, that's it's what not mine is. But there's a light switch in the garage and light switch in our closet where that is. But the closet, it's a large closet. I mean, it is almost as big as one of the bedrooms in my old house. That's how big the closet is. But the only thing that's in there is a light switch. That's it. There's no AC outlets in there. I thought, well, that would be a perfect place to stick something you just want to have sitting on the charger. But there's no outlets in there.
That's not difficult to fix.
Well, I could have probably had them put them in there when I was planning the house, but nah, I didn't really care at that point,
Well, there's a light fixture in there, and you can get an adapter.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it depends on if it's, because it's, well, I've got these little circle lights all over the house. Like, there's two of them in my office space here. I don't really need a lamp up here, okay? I just turn the switch on and have the barn lights on, and that gives me plenty of light. All right. In fact, more light than I would really like to have, but I think what I need to do over the weekend is I need to get the stepladder and bring it up here, because they're probably going to be the easiest ones to reach, and see if those have standard light bulbs in them. Because if that's the case, then I could work that out, but it would be weird, and the wife wouldn't like it, so, you know. That's okay. I'll have plenty of places to charge things. But, you know. Little things like that about the house, you know, are a little bit annoying, but they're not bad, you know. I do need to get, like, a rack for the bicycles to hang them on the wall so they take up less floor space. And right now, my Traverse sits out in the driveway because it'd be really tight if we have both vehicles in there, and I would not have enough room in the garage for storing anything if I parked both cars in there. So I'm just going to leave it outside. I don't care. Once he moves out, then I'll park on the other side where Luke is at right now. Or I'll park my 80s rebuild project if I ever do one of those. I wouldn't mind getting like an old 80s car and, you know, making it look nice.
Let me guess, Z28 Camaro.
That's a maybe. I'd probably want a Firebird before that, or a Trans Am.
All right. Well, it's getting late.
Yeah, we gotta wrap it up. So I'm gonna play us out. Here we go. You ready? See you in a week.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Bam.
Oh my God!
It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, and that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
I am short.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Boo.
Yeah.
You know what I made Monday, man? On the grill?
What'd you make?
I got some Wahlburger patties, and they brought a new blend to the store that was there last time we were at the grocery store. American-style Kobe blend. So Kobe beef and just and it was a blend of Kobe and regular ground beef.
Oh yeah,
and they were delicious. Oh, I've yet to do like a, because you can smoke on this thing, but I've yet to do anything smoked yet. But it does a fantastic job with grilling pretty much everything. That's another wife. Argument there. I have the cord, and it did originally have the bucket. Like I bought like a just a plain old paint bucket to store the wood pellets in, all right, instead of the plastic bag. That way it keeps them out of the, you know, keeps moisture out of them. All right. And I wanted to keep that bucket out in the screen room, and I lost that battle. I'm just, you know, I'm like, fine, I don't have to fill it up that much. It's like probably, it depends on how long the cook is. You know, like burgers, that's not a long cook. You know, I can probably do burgers and steaks a couple times a week, maybe some hot dogs one day. And I would finally use up the whole hopper. All right, so it takes a bunch. And then I think when I decide I'm not going to grill for a while, like maybe in the winter, I'm going to purge all the pellets out of it just so that they don't clog up the auger or anything like that. But I highly recommend my Pit Boss. I love it. I need to try doing some grilled pineapple on it, which that sounds delicious.
Grilled pineapple is really good.
Yep. Like, throw a little bit of brown sugar on it and just throw it on the grill. Oh, man. Just sounds good to me. Because that reminds me of one of my dad's favorite cakes, which was a pineapple upside down cake. Which, who makes that anymore?
My wife made some one of those a couple of months ago.
There you go.
I told her to make it again. Got all the ingredients. She still hasn't made it yet, so... There's that.
Yep. Yep, I made... for dessert tonight, I made some scones. Not from scratch. I actually bought them in the frozen food section. Mason-Dixie scones, I think they were.
All right, I gotta stop the recording here, Joel. Say goodnight.
Good night.
Yeah, and the only thing with it is, hopefully, if you're not getting like an actual OEM, because a lot of people will say they're OEM and they're not quite. So they don't exactly match up with your lengths. You might have to do some adjustment in your bed height. Dan's taking a shower again.
I shouldn't have to, though. I bought the exact same one that was on it. I just went to Amazon and said, oh, that's the one I ordered before. There we go. So,
okay. Well, it does still happen sometimes where, you know, you order the one and they send you a big
piece of black poop because that's the filament I was using.
Is that any better?
Much.
Okay. Yeah, I don't hear the shower anymore.
Alright. I don't know why that happens every time I reboot my system. And I leave the microphone plugged in. It just always happens.
Well, I switched it over to KDE Plasma on my laptop tonight, and I had to reset, like, you know, make it so I can actually read the shit.
I'm too small for you.
But yeah, this Lenovo has like a 4K screen, so yeah, it's too small.
Maybe you should quit acting like a bitch.
There you go. No, I do have some Atari 800XL action, because I actually got it up and running and it works.
That's cool. Oh, well, 8:29.
When you do that, are you actually quoting Die Hard?
Mm-mm. No, it wasn't intentionally. Wasn't doing that intentionally.
I think you're doing it subconsciously.
Yep.
I haven't seen Die Hard in
saw it once when you were younger, and you started mimicking the guy that did it, and it just stuck with you.
It's the world's greatest Christmas movie.
That's what they say.
Took my son's car in the shop, had an oil change done, had a check engine light that intermittently is coming on and off, and So they ordered the part. And they said, well, you can leave it here. We'll let you know when it's done. My son didn't want that to happen. So they set an appointment for Saturday. It's going to get fixed. I actually did use... I have one of those ODB2 Bluetooth thingies. And it was a kind of a generic code. It doesn't really tell you what you need to fix. It's like a weird one. It could be... It's like one of those ones where you can read everything through it, and it's like, okay, it could be that it's just full of sludge. It could be there was a loose wire. There could be their sensor that it's bad. The very worst scenario was the ECU is bad. So it's like, yeah, I'll have to take it in the shop and have somebody look at it, because, you know, if it had been me, I'd have took a piece of tape, put it over the check engine light, and continue to drive unless it started to run rough. Because it wasn't really... That's the funniest thing is you look in the description for the code, and it's like... Like, if you have this, the symptom is that it runs like this, but it's running fine. So it's just other crap. And then,
why would you put a piece of tape over the check engine light? Why not just ignore it? If that's what you're going to do. That seems like an awful lot of effort.
Well, no, see... That is what I could do, but for my son, no, he, if it comes on when he's driving it, he'll bitch and moan and gripe, and I'm like, you know, it's not that big a deal. I said, it's okay, as long as it's not flashing, it's okay, because that's the usual, if it starts to, if you have one of those and it flashes, yeah, you want to get it in the shop right away. Before you blow the engine. But it's probably something simple. It's probably not going to cost that much. But, and then, of course, while it's sitting there, I say, well, your tires, front tires are low. And I'm like, yeah. And he says, the battery's on its is on its way out, too. And I'm like, yeah, those are things that I've had shops tell me. And, like, I'll drive it for another 5 years on that battery, and it's fine. not so much in the tires. Tires, I'll probably just start looking at.
Yeah, as long as you got a second vehicle, who cares if the battery is going out?
Yeah, I mean, the battery or the tire. I mean, because that's the other thing, too, is I have to think. I think his 2016 did not come with a spare. I know mine has a spare. But
just get some cheapo tires from Walmart.
Yeah, well, I'm going to probably go down to tire discounters. They usually have a pretty good rate, and you know, as long as they're not freaking white walls or anything like that, I'm not a tire snob. I'm like, give me four pieces of rubber. They don't have to be like 100,000 mile tires, because who knows how long I want to keep this thing. Well, but Those ODB2, I've used both the Bluetooth version, and I think I have a Wi-Fi one somewhere around here, but I couldn't find it. So I ordered another one. VPAC is the brand name. They work well. I think I prefer the Bluetooth one over the Wi-Fi one, because at least when I do it over Bluetooth, it lets me stay connected to the Wi-Fi. But those are kind of worth having, because at least then you can look at it and see if it's anything real serious or anything like that. But then one interesting channel, if you haven't seen it yet, look up the Car Wizard on YouTube. He just had another one where they talked about there was a car that he had in his shop where it was basically lighting up all the freaking lights on the dashboard. And it wound up being one part on that car. And it was like a relatively minor
wiring harness?
No, it was something simpler than that. I mean, it was really simple. But apparently manufacturers do that to goad people into going to the shop. At least that's what he says. I don't know if that's true or not, but you know, they do stuff like that. Plus, there was another one where he took the story in that video he talked about where they had a check engine light and the air conditioning stopped working. You looked up to the computer, it wasn't even something in the air conditioning that was wrong. It just turned the air conditioning off because of the light. Because they wanted you to come, well, he says because they wanted you to come bring it in. You replace this unrelated part to the air conditioning. Oh, hey, the air conditioning starts working. So, yeah. Car companies. And I actually got a good topic we'll bring up on the show, too. From somewhere I just saw. I'll have to see if I can actually find the story.